Guten Tag, ich bin Tobias Aigner und heiße Sie wieder herzlich willkommen zum Scalable Capital Podcast. Scalable Capital ist ein digitaler Vermögensverwalter, ein Robo-Advisor, wie die meisten sagen. Robo-Advisor automatisieren die Geldanlage. Sie setzen meist auf Technologie und kostengünstige Anlageprodukte und wollen so mehr Menschen Zugang zu einer professionellen Vermögensverwaltung bieten. Die Frage am Schluss ist aber, was bringen Robo-Advisors dem Anleger wirklich? Fahren Privatinvestoren wirklich besser, wenn sie ihr Geld bei einem Robo-Advisor anlegen? Einer, der diese Frage wissenschaftlich untersucht hat, ist Francesco da Cunto. Er ist Professor an der Carroll School of Management am Boston College und Co-Autor einer neuen Studie mit dem Titel The Promises and Pitfalls of Robo-Advising, also zu Deutsch, die Versprechen und Fallstricke von Robo-Advice. Und er ist heute hier bei uns, um über die Ergebnisse seiner Studie zu sprechen. Das machen wir natürlich auf Englisch. Hi Francesco, we are so glad to have you here today.
Hello Tobias, thank you so much for having me here today and thanks to all the listeners for being here.
Fine, Francesco, let's start with a few insights about you and your research activities. How did you get in the field of finance and what are your research projects today?
Yeah, in large part, this was driven by personal experiences, I have to say. I come from a family where everybody's a medical doctor. They have PhDs, very highly educated. But then I would realize when I was a teenager that my parents really had no idea what to do with their money, how to invest, or to invest for retirement. And so I sort of realized this really needs to be something very hard for people to understand and to process. And so that's what brought me to an area of finance research, which is behavioral finance. And so the idea is trying to understand how people actually think about decision making, which type of biases might hinder them from gain from their investments and actually execute efficient investments, and so on and so forth.
And what are your current research projects?
So in terms of research projects, I work on two main areas. One is called cultural finance. And so in this area, I study what is the effect of deep-rooted cultural norms on the way in which people make investment decisions. So in some work, for instance, which is based on German households in particular, I study the extent to which historical norms against the financial markets and historical bankruptcies of local listed firms are still hindering households today from investing in stocks. So they got scared, they got burned once, and over time they also pass on to younger generations this type of norm. Mm-hmm. A second area instead, which is more related to the robo-advising studies, tries to understand how cognitively costly is it for people to think about investments, so to measure these cognitive costs and to think about how we can eliminate these costs and these mistakes through robo-advising, so through algorithmic advice.
Pretty interesting. Most interesting for us is, of course, that recently you conducted a research study about robo-advice. It is based on a huge data set provided by an online broker, which also offers a robo-advice service. And individual clients of this online broker could choose between managing the portfolio by himself or using the robo-advisor. And you try to find out who is better off, the robo-users or the do-it-yourselfers. Let's start with the performance. Who achieved higher returns?
So actually what we find with no doubt at all is that the investors using the robo-advisor achieved higher performance, both in the short run, by which I mean 2-3 months, as well as in the long run. So the longest period we can study is about 5 years in this data. And so we do find that this is in large part the case because the robo-advisor really is more unbiased. They don't have many of these behavioral mistakes. Typically, we find in individual investors, such as the tendency to not realize losses in their investments, even when it would be better for them to do so and move on to different investments, or other biases like trend chasing. So the robo-advisors are not facing this type of biases, which is the reason why we see on average their trades perform better.
Okay, Can you also give us some insights in how the automated portfolios differed from the human investors' portfolios in terms of diversification and risk, for example?
Yeah, so diversification is really the right word to mention in this setting, because the portfolios set up by the robo-advisors were extremely more diversified than the ones that individual investors would choose. And so we find this is in large part because individual investors usually tend to either pick stocks or funds they're more familiar with, irrespective of what the expected performance of these funds might be. Especially in terms of location preferences, we detect this form of cognitive bias, which we call home bias, whereby many investors always like to buy the stocks of firms or funds that are heavy on industries and firms or the locations where they live. Now, this is typically a pretty large mistake because it leads to lower diversification for the portfolios. And it's also wrong on the side of the investor because already a large part of the human capital and the wages of these investors are invested locally. So if anything, these people should diversify somewhere else. Mm. And the robo-advisor portfolios are very diversified because they don't face this type of local preferences.
Did you measure risk as well?
We also measured risk, and indeed we do find that the portfolio market volatility, so after adjusting for market volatility, so the portfolio volatility is substantially lower for the robo-advisor. So I think for 85% of the sample of investors we have, the volatility, which was about half of the volatility of the original portfolios, when they were with ourselves investors.
Yes.
A very, very large difference, which indeed underlines that diversification is one of the crucial benefits of robo-advised portfolios.
Did the robots trade more or less than the humans?
So it turns out that the frequency of trading by the humans is very diversified. So what we find is that the robos tends to trade and readjust the portfolios about once every month in our setting, whereas most of these humans were trading more than that. People that were trading too much were performing worse, but in our setting, even people that were trading barely were not performing very well because they usually had very undiversified portfolios. So that's why the robot, by being more or less in between, ended up actually performing better because the trades were not too often, so the fees paid were not very high, but at the same time, they were very well diversified.
It is often said, and you also mentioned, that with robo-advisors, the investors are less prone to behavioral biases. Was that confirmed by your analysis? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, definitely. So what we did is we found ways and measures to actually have proxies for the extent to which individuals were prone to several biases. And we look at three biases. The first one is called the disposition effect. So this is the idea that typically individual investors, as I alluded to earlier, they don't want to realize their losses, even if realizing losses and investing in some other stock would actually be beneficial to them. And they also realize gains too early. So they don't stay invested just because they want to get the sensation of having gained something and having realized it. So we do find that after using the robo-advisor, this tendency dramatically reduces. For the average investor in our sample, that's reduced by about 30%. And in large part, this is because, of course, instead the trades of the robo-advisor are not prone to this bias in any respect. The trades are an algorithmic trade, which is based on principles of finance and doesn't include these rules of thumb. Mm-hmm. A second bias we also look at is what is called the trend chasing. So this is the idea that whenever we see a stock that has a positive return several days in a row, we observe individual investors being very highly willing to invest in that stock because they feel like there is some kind of odd hand effect or something to gain of this stock that is doing so well. Now, of course, instead, what we know from the data is that there is a lot of mean reversion in these returns, which means that stocks that are improving very fast also then tend to do worse going forward, just going back to the levels they were coming from. And even in this case, the individuals display this type of bias pretty dramatically in the data. But after accessing the robo-advising portfolio, they don't anymore, just because the robo-advisor is designed in a way that doesn't take into account the most recent stream of returns when proposing an allocation.
Let's also talk about the people who chose the robo-advice service. Did you detect any special characteristics in this group? Are they, for example, younger, richer, more educated or less educated in the area of finance? Were there any surprises in what you found?
Yeah, so this is actually a great point because when we started, our prior honesty was that we would have found in particular younger investors and especially those with a background in technology of some sort in terms of like educational background would be much more willing to go with robo-advising because they would find it more familiar. They would understand better what an algorithm is. But we don't find any of that in the data. So in terms of demographic characteristics, the group of people that decide to go into robo-advising and those that decide to remain do-it-myself investors are quite similar. Age, gender, education levels, and so on and so forth. Now, the one dimension in which they do differ, which is also one of those you were mentioning, is I would say their financial sophistication, which we can kind of measure based on the amount of assets under management that they have, and especially the number of times that they actually check on their portfolio and they log in to this online platform. So we do find that it is the more active investors that are more willing to move with robo-advising, which is, you know, very promising in a sense because it makes us realize that the investors that understand what's going on, they do realize that the robo-advisor does better than what they can do on their own, but also poses challenges because it suggests that we have to find ways to also reach to those that probably don't go with robo-advising because they don't understand how robo-advising is better than themselves.
Mm-hmm. To sum it up, would you say the private investors can really benefit from the rise of robo-advice in the last years?
Yes. So I think that is also both in my research and in other work that I've seen produced recently a very concrete and real statement. In large part, the reduction of fees is a huge advantage for individual investors and the diversification of the portfolios, as we mentioned earlier. And this is true for studies that have looked at different contexts like Europe, within Europe, several countries like the UK, Southern European countries, Germany or Scandinavian countries, as well as in the US. So it's kind of a global phenomenon. Robo-advising allows accessing lower fee portfolios and at the same time, more diversified portfolios, which is why in the long run, these portfolios end up performing better.
And what makes a robo-advisor a good robo-advisor?
So that's a million-dollar question somehow. But what we find or we think, I mean, is that a crucial feature of robo-advisors that is usually kind of underlooked is the ability of these robo-advisors to retain their clients. And so only robo-advisors that are really credible because they do explain in detail what they do and why they do or they perform different strategies are those that are able to retain clients. And so we studied robo-advisors in India, in the US. In all these cases, we find that often robo-advisors that are not very clear or are not explaining very well what they're doing are more likely to lose their clients on the way. So one feature that really has to be emphasized, apart from the specific strategies, is clarity and make sure that investors understand what's going on.
Okay, Francesco. So please let us know, what are your plans for your future research? More about robo-advice And if so, what questions will you be looking at?
Yeah, so we'll definitely, so we already have plans to think about other questions in robo-advising. And we think one of the big questions in this area is to what extent are robo-advising and human advice complements or substitutes? So what we find from preliminary analysis, for instance, is something which is very surprising at first. Typically, we think that robo-advisors will just replace human advisors, because they're cheaper and they do their job better. So why shouldn't should human advisors even exist anymore? But what we find in our data is that individual investors actually tend to reach out to humans even more after they go into robo-advising. And one of the reasons for that is that investors that before accessing robo-advising knew basically little or very nothing about financial investments, now all of a sudden they get more engaged. They have more questions to ask to somebody because they do understand more what is going on, which is, of course, a great feature, a side effect feature of robo-advising, making sure that people actually understand what's going on and they get more involved with their finances. At the same time, potentially it will require some human support along the way. And so a second question also that we want to sort of work on going forward is the extent to which robo-advisors can eliminate the behavioral biases I discussed about earlier. So in research so far, we find that these behavioral biases decrease, but they're not completely fully eliminated, whereas in principle, we should expect that access to robo-advising fully debiases people. And so we want to understand why people are still so resistant to try to keep on with their biases, and they don't want to give them away.
Are there any other fintech developments besides robo-advice that you find exciting and worth researching?
Yeah, so I think so. Several areas are becoming extremely interesting. The whole blockchain area and the applications of blockchain, even not just to cryptocurrencies, which was the first application, but even to other forms of investments, is a very interesting area of research. In particular, to what extent could this type of blockchain certification disintermediate the relationship between an individual investor, a brokerage house, or an individual investor and their bank? So we can think about a world, a futuristic world in which banks wouldn't exist anymore just because these blockchain structures would be allowing to perform trades in a way that is fully certified. And so how does a world without bank look like? It looks like, and what should we expect, like from the extent to which people would trust or not trust these alternative instruments for their trades? I think, I mean, that would be important because technically we can eliminate the intermediation of banks, but practically if people don't trust these technologies, they will never be willing to go to them, even if they're cheaper, potentially.
Many thanks for this very interesting conversation, Francesco. And please stop by again the next time you visit Germany.
Thank you. I would love to.
Das war unser Podcast mit Professor Francesco D'Acunto von der Boston College Business School, der uns mehr über seine Studie zum Thema Robo-Advisor verraten hat. Übrigens, wenn Sie eine deutsche Kurzzusammenfassung dieser Studie lesen wollen, dann schauen Sie doch mal im Blog auf unserer Homepage vorbei unter www.scalable.capital/blog. Unter dem Titel Robo-Advice, was die Wissenschaft dazu sagt, schreibt unser Mitgründer Professor Stefan Mitnick dort über die wichtigsten Ergebnisse von D'Acuntos Untersuchung. Danke, dass Sie uns heute zugehört haben. Ich hoffe, Sie sind auch bei der nächsten Folge unseres Podcasts wieder dabei und wünsche Ihnen einen angenehmen Tag. Auf Wiedersehen.
Scalable Capital Vermögensverwaltung GmbH erbringt keine Anlage-, Rechts- und oder Steuerberatung. Sollte dieser Podcast Informationen über den Kapitalmarkt, Finanzinstrumente und oder sonstige für die Vermögensanlage relevante Themen enthalten, so dienen diese Informationen ausschließlich der Erläuterung der erbrachten Dienstleistungen. Die Kapitalanlage ist mit Risiken verbunden. Bitte beachten Sie hierzu die Hinweise auf unserer Internetseite.